Welcome to Stone Cold Shrews. I'm Brandon Strange with Charlie Polillo and Josh Jordan. Follow them on X at Polillo and at Josh Jordan 975 and read their work on sportsmap.com. We'll be doing a postseason matchup preview early next week, and assuming they'll be in the wildcard series, the Astros that is, we'll be reacting to each of the wildcard series games live on YouTube following each game. If you're a Texans fan, the three of us are doing live reactions following every game this season for our Texans On Tap podcast. We did a live breakdown of Texans Vikings on Sunday, and we'll be dropping a Jags Texans preview Thursday, so you can check out all that stuff on our other YouTube channel, Sportsmap Texans, or in audio form again on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Texans On Tap. So, gents, this past week, if not month, has kept with the running theme of Houston's season, which has been nothing easy. The good news is the Astros took three or four from the Angels, and that should mean decreased drama as they host Seattle this week and should clinch the division. Bad news is now that Yordan's knee is a concern, with Joe Espada telling the media Sunday, quote, Yordan is not great. There's been some allusions since then that they've perhaps dodged a bullet. Nothing official from the team yet. Also, side note, Aaron Geddy also suffered from what the team's calling calf cramp. So we can only hope that's the extent of it. Obviously, the headline coming out of the weekend is the bullpen. We'll dig into that stuff in a little bit. But before we do, it's probably worth taking a step back just a bit and digesting the season as a whole as we are in the final week of it. Given the level of expectation that surrounds this team and given the avalanche of injuries that they've had to power through all season, how do you guys grade the accomplishment of what Houston has done to be on the verge of securing yet another division title and postseason berth?
I will go with a firm B+. And for the purposes of our conversation, whenever you happen to be consuming Stone Cold Stros this week, it's over, right? It would take the biggest final week choke in the history of Major League Baseball for the Astros not to have one thing as soon as Monday night, or if it was to take another day or two. They are the full season American League West champions for a seventh consecutive year. That's a spectacular achievement. The 2005 parallel of the Tombstone team that started 15-30. This team started 12-24, 10 games out of first place in June. And the Astros played more quality baseball for a longer stretch than when they were one of the worst teams in the sport over the first 6 weeks or so. I'm fond of saying play the course. The Astros extremely fortunate that their course is the American League West. Right? The Astros surge, it also took Seattle falling apart for 2 months. But if someone opens the door for you and you barge through it, you don't get denied credit or shouldn't get denied credit for barging through. But this is the only division that the Astros could have won this year. Well, darn the luck. It's the division that they are in. That 2005 team went in as a wild card. Fewer wild card teams then, one fewer round to negotiate in the postseason. But the 2005 Astros, we know, wound up in the World Series. In this platinum Astros era, golden era doesn't do it enough justice. All right, the Astros standard, there's the feel of, well, if they don't at least make it to the World Series, hugely disappointing. If they're not in the American League Championship Series, the whole thing's a failure. That's unreasonable, but in the narrow tunnel of 2024, it certainly would feel that way to many, I'm sure, including to all the members of the 2024 Astros who've been around for any of the prior seasons. But going back to the playoffs again, in all likelihood, having to survive that best of three to even get into the division series for the first time as a division champ, it's going to be rough sledding. Are they likely to make it back to the World Series, much less win it? No, they're not. Getting back to an eighth consecutive ALCS, probably not going to happen, but probably is not definitely. And the Astros having played themselves into a position where it is possible, that's why I go B+. Postseason grade separately, the fact that they're in the softest division in baseball keeps me from giving them A- or A.
I'll go A minus, up the ante just a little bit. If we just look back, remember Dana Brown is being asked questions about being a seller. And he was just like, no, I've been on too many good clubs. This club is too good that we're going to have to sell. They're going to turn it around. They're going to hit. They're going to pitch better. And it all happened for a lot of different reasons for it. And I mean, the injuries they got past with Javier going down and young guys stepping up, Aaron Geddy and Hunter Brown looking like a bright future for you. I think they did an incredible job. And it's just a reminder. You look at what the Rangers did last year, coming out of nowhere and winning the World Series. And where are they this year? You know, back to where they were before, not making the postseason again. That just it's hard to climb the mountain and win a World Series, but it's even harder to maintain it and keep being a contender every single year. So I give the Astros a lot of credit. And I'm impressed. Just we should have known it, the grit with these guys. And not having Kyle Tucker for that huge chunk of the season, they still managed to find ways to win ball games. So, yeah, I'll give them an A-. I'm impressed with what they did this year. And it gives me a little confidence that maybe this window isn't closing anytime soon. Maybe they can keep doing this for the next couple, 3 years.
No reason it's not in play, especially in this division. I just think it's part of the fun, actually, for fans and some bloviating members of the media, I suppose, to overreact to most things, good or bad. That this team should have quit on the season and sold. You know, they were within a month of bad baseball beyond 12-24, where the ditch would have been too deep. But the Major League Baseball season is so long, and that they got within a game of the Mariners by the All-Star break after being 10 games out, not even a month earlier. Plenty of egg on faces to go around. I suppose Astros fans with it will happily wipe it off, sprinkle a little salt and pepper and down that, maybe with a side of crow to eat as well.
To the point of not diminishing the accomplishments of winning the division, Seattle's implosion, Josh, as you mentioned, could have opened the door for the reigning champs to make a move as well. Rangers were not able to overcome their injuries. Texas did not sell at the deadline. So they ended up being in this purgatory of not being competitive, but also not being able to bring in any assets that would allow them to help retool for next year. Astros did stay the course and find themselves on the verge of another postseason berth. So as we're talking about injuries and discomfort, in the column of discomfort, guys, the bullpen gave up 7 runs on 7 hits in 3 innings in Sunday's implosion in the hands of the Angels of all teams. Let's talk about the bullpen. Caleb Wirt, his ERA has ballooned over 5 in the past week. Taylor Scott has gone down with a sprained back. Hector Neris's ERA is the highest it's been in over a month. Ryan Presley has given up earned runs in 2 of his last 4 appearances. Josh Hader has blown 3 of his last 10 save opportunities. On a very scientific scale of 1 to 10, 1 being Brad Lidge against prime Albert Pujols, 10 being 2022 postseason Presley. What's your confidence level in Houston's bullpen just a week out of the postseason?
I'm going to take a macro view on this and as a result, give it a 6. There's vulnerability there. Josh Hader has not had a good season. I know he had the 29 consecutive saves and it's a factual stat, but there is an immense amount of softness to it that, depending where we go in the conversation, I'll shine further light on it. Josh Hader has been a rather middling closer this season, and that's a kind of important role. 4 years, $76 million more attached to it, by the way. But for 2024, Hader's just a closer. Ryan Presley had been pretty darn solid over the last month or so after having looked shaky himself for a good while and then a stint on the IL. Brian Abreu has been shaky too often for too long now, for the best of what we've seen from these guys. Taylor Scott had faded pretty much since the All-Star break. I don't know cause and effect from when he went 3 innings in that opener game. He hasn't been the same guy and now down injured, probably not in the mix. I just think Hector Neris is a little bit of a ticking time bomb. Maybe time runs out on it before it detonates, but that's the 4th best reliever in the Astros bullpen. And then you get into the situational use of Caleb Ferguson from the left side. Brian King now, I think, is on this playoff roster from the left side. Ort, small number of innings, so a couple of bad outings really can mushroom the earned run average. But he's your 5th, 6th guy out of the bullpen. In the macro, the Yankees bullpen's very questionable. Their closer, Clayton Holmes, lost the job. That's how bad he was for a long period of time. The Orioles bullpen is very shaky. Now, the Cleveland Guardians bullpen is by far the best in the American League, and they have a great closer in Emmanuel Clase. The Astros have a closer in Josh Hader, whose latest failure on Sunday, you know, he had the 29 consecutive saves. Well, now he's blown 3 since then. But throw in all the 9th-inning home runs he's given up this year, a fistful of them in tie games. 33 saves, 9 of them have been 1-run saves, where you come in where you don't have a safety net. that Josh Hader, 13 of his 33 saves, he came in with a three-run lead. Ooh, a save, because you didn't completely suck rotten eggs and blow a three-run lead in one inning. It's not like Josh Hader comes in with two outs in the seventh inning or routinely gets four out saves. He comes in for the ninth inning, and he has had mostly marshmallowy soft opportunities. I mentioned Clase, who has been incredible. He has 17 one-run saves to Hader's nine. Hader's blown four saves, non-blown saves, the ninth inning home runs that he gave up to lose games, to Cal Raleigh, to Logan Ohapi, to Christian Vasquez, to Michael A. Taylor. Clase is 46 out of 47 with an ERA under one going into the final week of the season. Josh Hader's given up 12 home runs in 68 and a third innings of work. There's not another pitcher in baseball this season in the closer's role who's given up double figures. Damn right there's a concern level with Josh Hader in postseason baseball. And the way Abreu's been a little dicey. Postseason Presley's been damn near perfect. Okay, he's not in the closer's role now. But I still think overall they have good depth when you look at the other guys, a part of that Guardians bullpen if the Astros get into a matchup with Cleveland in the second round.
Yeah, confidence level, I'm near Charlie, somewhere between a 6 and a 7. I guess I'll start with Presley first. You know, last year, there was a reason that they decided after the season to go get Hader. You know, Graveman got hurt. There were other reasons. But Presley wasn't quite what he used to be. He was great in the postseason, as Charlie mentioned. But, you know, in 21 and 22, he had an ERA below 3. Last year, the ERA goes up to 3.58. And that's probably what gave the Astros some concerns. Like, maybe we need somebody a little more dominant in that role. And then we look at this season, Presley, ERA, 3.6. So 3.58 last year, 3.6 now. This just might kind of be who Ryan Presley is at this stage in his career. But what's kind of disappointing is, you know, they go get Hader to try and get that dominant guy, you know, 1.28 ERA last year. This season, his ERA is higher than Ryan Presley's. It's 3.67. Maybe you can point to the innings pitched. He only pitched 56 and a third last year. He's at 68 and two thirds this year. But I mean, 12 innings, that's not a huge amount. But I think that will be important maybe to, you know, to get him a little bit of rest here if they can clinch quickly and get that arm, try and get all these arms as rested as possible as they hopefully head to the postseason. So that's kind of where I am, is that Hader's just kind of come in and become like another Presley instead of being a guy that's that one step more dominant that I think the Astros were hoping for. The positive is, though, who knows? Next year, Hader could have an ERA in the ones again. You know, he's had some up and down seasons. So, you know, maybe he comes back and he's much better next year. But as we go into this postseason with what we've seen from Hader, you have to be a little concerned. He gives up home runs pretty easily. And I hate to bag on him, because when he does come in with those big cushions where they have a pretty good lead, you want him to come in and just fire fastballs and not walk anybody. And if you give up a solo home run, no big deal. Just get out of there with the win. I'm a little worried with him. That slider that he tries to backdoor, sometimes it gets a little too much of the plate to righties and they can crush it. And the fastball's not as unhittable as you would think for somebody that throws 97 miles an hour. So a little bit optimistic, but I'm not so like, oh, wow, we have a lights out bullpen like we did in 22. That's just not the case anymore. They're good, but they're not dominant. They're not great. Hopefully it'll be enough.
Yeah, Hader's generally tough to hit, but when guys hit him too often, they hit it a long way. And you alluded to it, Josh, he does walk guys. And, you know, walking a two-run homer, that's a good way to blow a one-run save opportunity, as he's done, what, three of his last 10 outings. So there's vulnerability there. But 2022 was just amazing and historic. The Astros now, they're just another team in contention. They're just another team with a bullpen that's pretty good. But looking to the wild card round, unless Cleveland utterly falls apart and the Astros win out this week, right, the Royals bullpen has been a season-long mess. The Twins, Yoan Duran has not been quite as good as he's been the last couple of years. Their bullpen's good, not great. Seattle, still alive for the wild card, has blown multiple games with its bullpen in the last week, along with Julio Rodriguez, one of the lamest base-running bonehead plays you'll ever see. And then there's Detroit, A.J. Hinch's Tigers, starting the final week of the season, 26 and 11. Over the last 37 games, but momentum dies the day you start that best of three, but the Tigers have a good bullpen. And while on the subject, Tarek Skubal pitches Tuesday for Detroit. If you're an Astros fan, want the Tigers, but want the Tigers to have to win this Sunday, the last day of the season, and have to use Skubal, because that would take him out of the wildcard series unless pitching on 3 days rest, if there was a game three to decide it next Thursday.
And getting back to Hader for just a second, it's tough to put innings and usage on Hader's inconsistency, considering that he started off the season this way. He started off shaky, as did the entire bullpen. So this is not something that's a new occurrence or something that we can point at to usage and maybe just a tired arm. And Charlie, when you talk about macro views, and speaking of guys named Abreu, the season has been so long that the Jose Abreu saga seems almost another lifetime ago at this point. John Singleton is hitting .290 for the month of September with a .947 OPS. We've seen him string together some nice runs this season. We know he's not a long-term answer at first, but he has been better than you could have anticipated. Yiner Diaz has had a great season. His bat has come back to life over the past week after falling into a slump after that Oakland series. And then part of this conversation, Victor Caratini. He's stayed steady as a hitter all season, hovering in that mid-270s with his batting average. Not a lot of walks or power, but that also seems to be Houston's offense in a nutshell for large swaths of the season, especially outside of the five spot and lower. Is Houston's answer at first base for the rest of this season and postseason just finding ways to platoon Diaz and Singleton at first with a combination of Caratini at catcher?
Oh, there's no alternative. It's very simple. John Singleton is quite a story, and we'll see how he hits against postseason teams' caliber pitching. But against right-handed pitching, he's been stout. OPS of 776 for the season. I mean, doesn't make you an elite first baseman, but that's totally playable. Obviously, leaps, bounds, and then more leaps and bounds beyond what you were getting out of Jose Abreu all those decades ago. So Singleton against right-handed pitching on merit absolutely is in there every game. Now, the platoon component happens to work very well on this in that Victor Caratini is a switch hitter, but he has been way better against left-handed pitching. John Singleton against left-handed pitching is a joke, right? His personal renaissance, okay, he's batting 149 against left-handed pitching. You want John Singleton nowhere near the batter's box against a left-handed pitcher unless you're down to a last out, Dubon is up, and you need a two-run homer. And maybe Singleton gets lucky, has two home runs against left-handers and 70-some-odd at-bats. But Singleton against lefties is overmatched. Caratini, it's only 53 at-bats, but he's batting .359 against left-handed pitching. So Caratini is in there against the lefty. Singleton sits. Singleton's in there against the righty. Caratini sits. Simple as that. The decision is who catches, who plays first base against the lefty. It's been Caratini catching Kikuchi for the most part. I would guess they stick with that. I don't think there's a clearly better catcher or first baseman defensively between Diaz and Caratini. I would lean to Diaz as the catcher, Caratini the first baseman when they're both in the lineup.
And that makes a lot of sense. I wonder how the Astros see it. It almost feels like they trust Caratini a little more behind the plate. I think that's why they used him to work with Kikuchi, the new guy coming into the team. So I'm like, are we going to get some of that Maldi type stuff that we got last year where it's like, well, we want Caratini behind the plate because he has more experience and all that kind of stuff. I don't know the answer to that. We'll find out here soon enough. But that's the only thing that makes me think, would they play Yiner a little more at first base because they want Caratini behind the plate catching? Do they trust him a little more than Yiner? I don't know. We'll see, but you know, we'll get to this later. It seems pretty obvious that the DH spot is going to be occupied by Yordan Alvarez, where we've seen Yiner Diaz DH a lot this season. I don't think that's going to be an option for them going forward.
Yeah, I think Yiner has been the primary catcher all season. I would not deviate from that in the postseason, but we know whoever's catching is a hell of a lot better the player than what Maldonado was for them last season. So either way, it's a substantial upgrade behind the plate.
And all you Maldi truthers can at Palillo for that conversation, because I want no part of it. So guys, as the final week winds down, the Tigers, Royals, and Twins are now all clumped together within a game of one another for the second and third wildcard spots, which will decide, among other things, who Houston will match up with in the wildcard series. We're nowhere near able to project that, but we can take a look at this roster and see who the probables are going to be for the Astros in the postseason. Did you guys see anything this week from the starting pitching staff that would change or shift your thinking in any way of the hierarchy of the starting rotation and also specifically Justin Verlander's place on a postseason roster?
I mean, if anything, the pass turn through the rotation just put one more emphatic exclamation point on it. Framber Valdez is number one. Hunter Brown is number two. If there's a game three, it's Yusei Kikuchi. Ronel Blanco is your number four long man option. Justin Verlander has no business being on the roster in the wild card series. He's 41 years old. He has such dignity and candor in the way he evaluated his performance and where he fits right now. I mean, it's beyond handwriting on the wall. Six outings since his return, Verlander was decent in two of them, atrocious in four of them, including the most recent outing against a AAA caliber Angels lineup. How could one possibly justify considering using him in a best of three series to keep your season going ahead of the divisional round?
I don't know how you go with Verlander there. And I think it's kind of hilarious that we just were talking about Dana Brown going low back at the baseball card with Justin Verlander. And then on 790 just the other day, he said, you know, the plan is to get through the first round and then see where he's at. How quickly we change from, oh, just look at the back of that baseball card. And now it's like, oh, we'll check on him after the first round of the playoffs. So at least it tells you they know what they're doing. I don't think we really question that. But when Dana says stuff like that, it makes you wonder a little bit. But this is the right move. We'll see where Justin's at. Right now, it's just not there. He's having trouble getting guys out against the Angels. I think he said recently maybe he rushed back a little bit too soon. Because, you know, he wanted to get enough reps at the end of the regular season to be prepared for the postseason, but he's just not where he wants to be. He's not getting the whiffs. The strikeouts just aren't there. And this Astros team has a lot of good pitching that isn't named Justin Verlander. So, you know, that's just where they are right now. Who knows? Maybe Verlander will have a bounce back year at 42. I wouldn't bet on it. But we're seeing the things with Justin, with Max Scherzer. These guys are just, they're breaking down. They're in their 40s. It's just what happens at the end of your baseball career. So, yeah, I like the three that Charlie mentioned. And Blanco's a good option, too. Charlie mentioned that, hey, depending on who they play in the postseason, that maybe that could change the pitching matchup if you'd rather have a righty or a lefty, depending on the lineup you're going up against. So it's nice to have Blanco as an option should you want to go that way.
And I tweeted this out after his last outing. I don't know what JV has left in the tank, but Houston has been very, very lucky to have had Justin Verlander on this team. And I don't just mean the Astros as a team. Houston, as us who follow the team, very fortunate to have been able to see JV wear that H on his cap over this past seven seasons. He's exceeded, you know, the nostalgia of that short window of the Pettit and Clemens teams of the early 2000s to bring two rings, to help bring two rings to this city. You can't speak enough about how fortunate and privileged we've been to be able to observe that, especially taking a step back and looking at the history of this organization. What Justin Verlander has brought to this team has been nothing short of just a championship demeanor and presence. Even in the season that we've had, to Charlie's point, really handled himself with a lot of dignity and in no way has tarnished his legacy. It's just unfortunate to watch someone on the back end of their career who is as legendary as him go through this and go through these struggles. Moving on to position players, Jake Meyers has really been going through it. Chaz McCormick, he hasn't been ruled out with that fractured finger, so we don't know what his availability will be for the postseason. We know Gamble's injury, he is out for the postseason. That opens up opportunity for Hayward. Josh, you alluded to this in part one, you know, of our conversation. Combined with Yordan's gimpy knee, how do you guys project the outfield composition for the postseason and the relationship between those decisions and how Joe Espada uses the DH position?
If you're given a prayer for baseball players' health, say one for Yordan's knee. But let me force trauma stop the idea. Oh boy, if it turns out Yordan's gone, the Astros are dead. No, it's not how postseason works. Atlanta Braves, when they beat the Astros to win the World Series, they lost Ronald Acuna Jr. for the entire season, or for the balance of the season when he tore an ACL in June or whenever it was. Did you see what the Astros did for 3 months without Kyle Tucker and pre-lousy Verlander? So that they can't do it for 3 weeks if, oh my goodness, Yordan turned out to need a scope. obviously it would lower their odds and make the task that much more daunting, but that they'd be flat out dead in the water? No. Because if in 2022, going into the postseason, you were counting on Jeremy Pena to be huge offensively, you're a liar. So if Yordan is right, and they have their top five, and against a right-handed pitcher, Singleton's batting sixth, then you have Pena, your third outfielder, Jake Myers. Chaz McCormick, Jason Hayward are viable options to play center field, but I think both are marked declines defensively from Jake Myers. And 2024 Chaz McCormick and 2024 Jason Hayward, which of those guys represents this great upgrade offensively as inept or impotent as Jake Myers has been for months now? So I think Myers is in there batting ninth in center field because among Hayward, McCormick, throw in Mauricio Dubon, there's not a good hitter in the bunch.
And that's the issue though, right? And you wonder if they will just go with defense because they've done it for most of the year, but Chandler Ohm had this in his column. I didn't realize it'd been this bad for Myers. He has the fourth worst second half OPS in baseball at 540. Now on the positive, Chandler Ohm also had this stat. Only five center fielders are worth more outs above average on defense. He's that good. The other thing that mixes into this is Fromber and Hunter Brown are in the top 10 for inducing ground balls. So it's not like you have Justin Verlander who's getting all these fly ball outs that you're like, oh, we got to have Jake Myers out there. On the other end of it, your relief pitchers give up a lot of fly ball outs. So you're not going to expect these guys to pitch the whole game. You know, maybe it's something where they put in Jake later in the game. They've been running Myers out there so much. This first series is going to be at home. Minute Maid has a massive center field. I find it hard to believe they're going to go with anybody other than Jake Myers in center field, unless Chaz is healthy. But still, I mean, I just don't think it's going to happen. I think it's going to be Myers and then left field. You know, Tucker will be in right left field. It could be Hayward, Dubon, just kind of depending on who they feel better in that matchup. I think Yordan's got to be at DH for you, unless he miraculously bounces back from what they were worried was a season-ending injury. Why risk it with him? I mean, if he's hurting himself with nobody around him, just sliding into second base, I don't want to mix in him running around in the outfield with other ways to injure himself as well, or to tweak it. You know, that could happen too. So, yeah, I think it's going to be Dubon, Hayward in left, and probably a lot of Jake Myers in center.
There are better, deeper lineups than what the Astros have. The Dodgers, Phillies, probably the Padres, Mets all over in the National League. Maybe a healthy Orioles team, a healthy Twins team in the American League. But the Astros still have an overall above average lineup. And all those other lineups, which one of them has a stud batting ninth, right? In Little League, there's going to be some little Skippy who's not very good, so he bats at the end of the order. You know what? Major League lineups, as measured against other major leaguers, someone's going to make outs most of the time, and that's the guy who bats ninth. So at least Myers is bringing you that plus defense as opposed to, sorry, Maldi truthers, right? He wasn't even an above average catcher defensively anymore, along with just the offensive sinkhole that he was. So if Jake Myers doesn't hit in the playoffs and the Astros are out, whether in two games or in the division series or the LCS or the World Series, or they win it, then I'm going to live or die with what their number nine hole hitter does.
What about potential X factors, I guess, for this team going into the postseason, and then any final thoughts on the way out the door?
There was an era in Major League Baseball. I think the managers might have carved out the lineups in stone tablets where the question was, do we carry nine pitchers or 10? Right now, everyone carries 13. When the Astros are in the wild card, three-game series in 3 days, there's no way in hell you have any use for 13 pitchers. To me, you don't need 12. They'll probably carry 12, which means Spencer Arrighetti is a long man, mop-up type guy, in addition to all the bullpen guys. But I would shave that down to 11 and carry the couple of extra guys, position players, for the just-in-case role. If you're down 3-2 in the sixth inning with two out and two on, pinch hit for Jake Myers right then. There was a game in San Diego where Joe Espada, it's like he nodded off or conceded, where he let Myers hit against the Padres closer, right-hander Robert Suarez, when you had a couple lefties on the bench. And okay, they're not big-time batters, but who isn't better than Jake Myers at this point? You know, if you want to pinch run for a catcher, because he's the tying run at second base and you're down 4-3 in the sixth, seventh inning. Have Cesar Salazar on your roster as a third catcher option. You know, Chaz McCormick, if he's healthy, he makes the roster as a right-handed bat against a left-handed relief pitcher option. Obviously, against a left-handed starter, you'd think he'd be in the lineup if you're going to carry him. Is there a spot you squeeze for a Shea Whitcomb or Gray Kessinger as just in case emergency defensive replacement? A player gets ejected, a player gets injured, something funky that happens. I don't see why you need nine guys in your bullpen in a three-game series.
Maybe Espada is going to be one of my wild cards in this. You know, first-time manager heading into the postseason, all the big decisions are going to come down to him. And Brandon and I talked about this off camera. Sometimes Espada gets a little greedy with his relief pitchers and, you know, puts Ort in the game. And then all of a sudden he coughs up a few runs and then Brian Abreu's out there having to warm up and come in the game because they tried to get by with a lesser reliever. And then now you got to put him out there. We saw that the other day where Hader had to come in because the other guys couldn't hold down the fort. So I'm hoping Espada won't get greedy like that. And, you know, Caleb Ferguson, too, I don't trust him a whole lot. He'll put him in at the end of games when they have a decent enough lead. And then all of a sudden, it's a close game, and you got to use one of your leverage relievers. So I'd like to see that be a little cleaner come the postseason. And Brian King, he's a guy they trusted to pitch against Bryce Harper when they played the Phillies. I mean, he's been really good this year. They ended up sending him down because Ferguson didn't have any more options. So I'm wondering if King could be a guy that could really come through for you in some, you know, some big situations. He's a lefty. He doesn't throw the hardest, but clearly the fastball is pretty deceptive because it works. He's been successful. So I think he could be somebody that I think he should make the roster, and I'd give him some opportunities.
And how quick is the spot his hook? Some managers get antsy in the postseason. You know, Fromber's had a rather mixed bag in his postseason career. Hunter Brown as a starter has no track record. You don't want to overreact and go too early to your bullpen. But when you have Ronel Blanco out there, you know, third, fourth inning, if a guy's to 75, 80 pitches, do you get, you know, that itchy trigger finger? And, you know, if the Astros advance to the division round, bullpen management's pretty easy. Game one, off day. Game two, off day. Games three, if necessary, four. Off day, if necessary, game five. The wild card's consecutive days, no travel or anything. The Astros will be the home team all three games if it goes the distance, but Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Espada has been loath to use guys 3 days in a row in the regular season. Is he going to want to adhere to that in the postseason? Or the reason you adhere to that in the regular season is so that for this specific series, if you need Hader, as questionable as he might be, 3 days in a row, you're going to him 3 days in a row.
I'm looking forward to seeing how Espada manages those extra starters, especially, you know, in this first series, and especially given the questions that we do have around the bullpen. I do wonder how quick he would go to another starter, knowing that he has the ability to do so and get some long relief out of them and maybe, you know, put out any potential fires. We'll have to wait and see, but we're not going to have to wait that much longer because we're less than a week out from getting a lot of these answers. So we'll end it there. This could be it for this episode of Stone Cold Strohs. If you listen on podcasts on places like Apple or Spotify, do us a solid and give us a 5-star rating. That does help people find our podcast. Josh, Charlie, and I will join you next week for our postseason coverage. You don't have to wait that long to get your Houston Sports Fix because all you have to do is subscribe to this channel, Sports Map Houston and Sports Map Texans on YouTube. We'll have more content during the week, including a preview of Jags Texans that drops on Thursday. Thanks for listening. Until next time, go Strohs.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.